Hello again, it's Dick Wamser back with part three of the autobiography. Same date, believe it or not, and we'll get this out to Larry hopefully this evening. I'll have it tomorrow so he can pop it in there for the weekend. And we left off on part two talking about computers and one thing and another, and about the trip out here to Oregon, so we'll eventually get to that. But I wanted to go back to computers again for a while and mention that from about 1986 until today, the computer has been a part of my day. I mentioned Nick James before in the last part of the autobiography, and one time we were visiting each other, and he asked me something that just fascinated me. He said, "How long has it been since you didn't physically touch a tape of some sort, open reel tape, cassette tape, or something? And how long has it been since you didn't touch any braille material?" And I couldn't answer that question because I touch them all the time. And it's been that way with the computer. I don't think any day has gone by that I haven't been touching a computer since 1986. In early 86, believe it or not, dragging an NCR desktop computer around with me in a backpack. I was taking a WordStar course at a community college. They had IBM computers in there, and they wouldn't let you attach anything to anything. So I had to drag in this Xerox desktop machine. I think it was a 8286. Set it up on the desk and plug in my Echo speech synthesizer with software, speech software that I had, my good old 12K software, and do the assignment, put it on a floppy disk, and then they could put that into their computer and see what was coming out. So it was very interesting to do that. But anyway, that's getting ahead of the story to some degree. I'm not going to harp on MS-DOS forever, but I will make one more statement about that. By early 1987, I had one of the first laptop computers available. It was a K-Pro laptop. It's K-A-Y-P-R-O. No relation to Kmart at all. It was a company that made test equipment primarily, but they got into the computer business. And I know there's the Type and Speak. I have that too. I've had a Type and Speak since 1993, but that's a great little machine. And you've got the Pac-Mates, and you've got all the Braille lights and all those things out there, and that's great. But this machine probably cost dollar for dollar about the same. I'm not sure exactly, but it was around $2,500 by the time you bought the Echo synthesizer that went along with it, and the speech program, and also it was about the same because the inflation rate has changed, and now the money isn't the same as it was before. You could set that up so that when you got to where you were going, if you had something going on at the same time, it had an automatic clock in it. It would turn itself on whenever you wanted it to turn itself on, which it did. It booted up on a 720K 3.5-inch diskette. When it booted up, you put in a second 720K diskette, and that loaded a program called PFS Write, which was a word processing program. At that point, the disk drive didn't make any noise. You could take the keyboard out of the laptop and close the laptop and set it on the seat next to you. You could put your Echo synthesizer on top of that closed laptop. I had a 6C-cell rechargeable battery pack next to it, so that gave it about 10 volts, which it was supposed to have. And just click away, no problem. Didn't bother anybody at all. No noise of any kind from the computer of any sort. When you got through with that situation that you were working with, in my case it was 2 hours long, put in a third diskette, save your material, and about 5 minutes later the computer would shut itself off. And you know, progress is progress, and I'm not trying to say go back to 1986, but where do you get that flexibility today? It just isn't out there anymore, and that's too bad. But anyway, the one thing that I was involved in from the very beginning was a bulletin board service called the Cleveland Freenet that many of you may have heard of. The Freenet concept was all over the country and all over the world for quite a while. And I can remember back in 1992 when Hurricane Andrew hit Florida, just downloading page after page after page of text from newspapers about that hurricane. And I'm sorry to say that I did get a virus attack and a lot of those discs were ruined, but I did keep them for archival purposes. But the net was so easy. It was all menu-driven. It was very simple and very obvious. And again, you could automate the system very, very nicely, much more so than in Windows today, unless you want to get really technical. But it was just a great way to grow up, and I never thought it would leave. I thought it was going to be there forever. But, of course, it did change in 1995. Windows 95 came out, and I jumped into it right away with ASAW. Since I had ASAP, I got ASAW as well. And I'd spend hours just totally frustrated trying to get it to work, because I'm thinking, I never had liked chess, but I always thought 9 or 10 steps ahead in MS-DOS because it was such a logical system. You always knew where you were, you always knew where you've been, you always knew what was coming up next, and if it didn't, what could go wrong to make it not come up next. But, of course, as you know, Windows is not that way, and I will not beat that into the ground anymore. We'll happily go on to something else. But the computer, I don't see how anybody could live without a computer today, especially because of email. But to go back to the situation after we got married, we kept the piano tuning business going, and I think the computer killed it. Eventually it did anyway, because not so much the computer, but the computer did. It was mainly the microprocessor that made the electronic keyboards so much more proliferable, if there is such a word as that. And, you know, why should you spend 3 hours a day practicing the piano and you just push a button and you get what you want? And if the mouse gets into the piano, or if it gets involved in some other degradation of some kind, and the mice get into it or something, or you spill a cup of coffee into it, you got to spend $500 fixing it. The keyboard goes bad, you throw away and buy a new keyboard and you're back in business again. But you can listen with headphones and not disturb anybody, so the keyboard eventually won out. And the basic problem, of course, is that when you amplify an acoustic piano and amplify an electronic piano, they don't sound much different. So you're not losing anything there by getting an electronic keyboard in a school system or in a church or someplace else and dumping the piano, because it's much more portable, it's much less expensive, and, you know, the beat goes on, as it were. So by about 1998, business was getting pretty bad. We had thought about moving out west again. In 1987, we did come out to Oregon, because my wife Donna's relatives all lived in either Oregon or California. And we liked Oregon pretty well. California was the welfare state as far as blind people were concerned, because of all the options that were available. It was nice to be able to do that, but I didn't like the smog, I didn't like all the crowds and the noise, and I could have probably found a happy place to live out in the middle of nowhere. But Donna liked Oregon better, but she's very allergic to mold, and so we picked a town called Brookings, which is on the coast of Oregon, just below the California border. And it's called the Banana Belt of Oregon, because you get temperatures that don't go down below about 40 degrees in the wintertime. It seldom, if ever, goes up above 90 degrees in the summertime, but it is very rainy. So we came out to look around in 1997, as I said, spent 2 weeks out there, and just enjoyed it thoroughly. It was just a wonderful place. I fell in love with it right away. And it wasn't time to move yet. We were just experimenting, just looking around, and we would have really been trapped if we had jumped into this. We just went looking to see what was available. Went into a trailer park, and we found a mobile home. I can't remember what the price was. Very reasonable. Like, it was under, I think it was under $25,000, if I'm not mistaken. $25,000 or $35,000. But it was everything. It was totally furnished. It had 2 TV sets, a coffee pot, refrigerator. It even had china and dishes and silverware. You could just move in tomorrow, and you'd be all set. But it wasn't the right time for us, so we didn't do it. When we left to come back to Ohio, we started getting the newspaper so we could keep up with prices, keep up with news, keep up with the crime rate, you know, keep up with what's going on in politics and so on, and see how things were going there. In May of 1998, my dad died. He'd had cancer for quite a while, and he had a large house on a 5-acre plot of land, and it was a mess. He lived by himself for about 10 years, and he was a dedicated pack rat, so we just walled up all junk. We had to take 8 months to clean the place out. It needed a lot of remodeling, which we had to do. And that took all of 1998, as we started in January. As he was in a nursing home at that point, we knew we would never come out. And we went all through 1998 into 1999, through the middle of 1999 until the late summer of 1999. And again, we thought we'd go out to Brookings and look around and see how things had changed and see how the newspaper accounts were actually keeping track of what was going on out there and take a second look. Getting all choked up for some reason. So anyway, we went out there again, and we talked to wanted to get the same real estate person that we had 2 years ago, but she was on vacation. And so we got another real estate person that was going to be taking her place, and she'd take us around. At this point, we had a thought process going that our son and daughter-in-law, who have 3 children, and were in their mid-30s, were thinking about moving. So we thought, well, maybe we could find a place with 2 houses on it, and they could have 1 house, we'd have the other house, and we could share the property and keep it maintained and so on, and do a better job of that than being all by ourselves. So we looked at those, and we looked at one that was a very sad story. This lady and her husband lived out there together. They were up in their late 60s, early 70s. He had a stroke and subsequently died. quite a few months later, she had a stroke. The wife to the widow had a stroke. So one of the daughters came out to live with her, and then the daughter had a stroke, and all three of them were in bad shape, so they had to sell and move into a bigger, a better area. But it was not really what we wanted. It was, the buildings were not very good, and the land was not developed. It was just mainly barren with no trees, no nothing on it, so we decided not to get involved in that. And then on the way back, the real estate agent said, "This house just came up the other day. I haven't even seen it yet myself, so we'll go look at it together." At Brookings, as you know, since it's a coastal town, it's on the seashore and right on sea level, essentially. This was about 900 feet above sea level up a nice winding hill. It was 3/4 acre. It was just had over 200 cedar trees on it, plus all kinds of fruit trees and rose bushes. Had a mobile home sitting on it, and was owned by a man and his wife in their mid-70s. She had developed Alzheimer's disease, and he couldn't take care of her anymore, so he wanted to move her to California, where he'd have a better chance of taking care of her because his children could help him and put her in a nursing home, and then they wouldn't have to be running back and forth so often, because this one place in California had an Alzheimer's care center. They didn't have anything like that there at that time in Brookings. They did later, but not then. So he was trying to sell it at a sacrifice just to get her moved up there. And the lady, real estate agent, said, "If you're interested in this, don't haggle, because it'll turn him off. Just, you know, give him his price if he wanted to buy the house." And of course, we couldn't build that without selling our house in Ohio first. So we put $1,000 down on this house in Brookings, because Donna fell in love with it instantly, and I didn't really care, because I could make it work whatever it happened to be, as long as I had a place to walk the guide dog, which I did have. So we put our house for sale back in Ohio, long-distance telephone, and of course they're faxing paperwork back and forth all over the place you've got to sign. You wouldn't believe the paperwork that you've got to sign to sell a house these days. I won't even get into that, because that's another 20-minute discussion. And obviously when you leave on a vacation, you don't leave your house in saleable condition, because you want it. We both had this problem, wanted to take everything except the kitchen sink when we go anywhere. So you have all these things you wanted to take, and then decided you can do without and leave them scattered here and there in every place. We had a cat at the time, and we had a friend come over to feed the cat, so we had the cat box in the litter box and the cat food in the bathtub, which is not a great place to leave when you're having people come in to see the place. My dad had been a very heavy smoker, and the place was closed up for 3 or 4 days, and even though we tried to get all the smell out, it was still pretty bad, and some people wouldn't care, but others would probably just, you know, fall over for the faint having to smell that stuff, so that was not in our favor. Anyway, it sold within 2 weeks' time. And in the end, at the end of November, in fact, I think the first week in December, we were out here in Brookings in 1999. So just an unbelievable situation, the way that it worked out. The move from Ohio to Brookings was a total nightmare. I won't get into that with you, because that was just chaos beyond belief. The movers were not honest with us at all about anything at all. And so they damaged a lot of our furniture. We had an awful time collecting from them, and it was just a three-ring circus to do that. But I won't even get into that story, because it's not really worth telling, except that it was very, very frustrating and irritating at the time. But what we did was we had the movers move our furniture out in a van, and then we drove out ourselves, because we thought about we should fly out, sell both cars, because we had two cars, had a business car plus our other regular pleasure car. We could, you know, tow the one car behind the moving van and drive the other car out, or should we sell both cars and fly and just have the moving van come out? So we just decided to drive out. And it was a great trip. The weather was great. We had a good time driving out there. We got into Utah. Donna caught the flu somehow. We stopped at a Kenny Rogers buffet-type place the night before, and I think she caught it there. So we were laid up in a motel in Elko, Nevada for 2 days. And it turned out to be great that we did that, because by doing that, we missed a snowstorm. If we had gone right through without stopping first, we'd hit that snowstorm, really been in trouble. But it worked out just fine. We did it that way. But we had to call a moving company to tell them to hold our furniture, because we weren't going to get there in time, but they weren't going to get there in time anyway, so that didn't make any difference. So anyway, again, to get back on the track here, I picked up the tuning business up there too, because there was no tuner in town. It was one thing we checked into. The man would come through maybe 4 or 5 times a year, and you were supposed to have as many pianos together as you could for him to visit and do as much work as he possibly could while he was there. So the business picked up pretty quickly, because there was somebody right there around the corner. And they even had a professional music society, that's not the right name for it, a music association in town. And what that is, there's a group of small towns in almost any area, and they cannot afford to bring a classical music group in, or even a classical pianist in, or any kind of a group for that matter, whether it's jazz or whatever, folk music. They can't support bringing somebody in from, say, San Francisco or Las Vegas or Los Angeles or any other close town. But if you get a group of small towns together, and they can bring a person onto a circuit so they can go into five or six little towns in 1 week, let's say a night at each one, they'll do better financially themselves, and all these towns get a chance to get some culture they wouldn't ordinarily have. So I got involved in tuning for that organization while I was in Brookings, and that was very nice. Got to see a lot of free concerts that way, and it worked out well. So then Donna's arthritis began to get worse, and that was because of all the humidity in the air, of course, out there in Brookings. And the arthritis in turn made the gardening more difficult, and the gardening in turn made the yard work more difficult. So we kept getting further behind in the yard work, and our son would come over 3 or 4 times a year with his family, and some occasions it's by himself at other occasions, and spend 2 whole days just mowing the lawn and trimming the trees and doing that sort of thing, which was not really what he wanted to do with the rest of his life. So we eventually came to Roseburg, and that's about, oh, 150 miles, I guess, toward the center of the state from Brookings. It's a nice area. It took me a while to get used to it because where we lived in Brookings, you could walk out the door and go another 300, 400 feet up into the mountain we lived on. And it wasn't a mountain, but we called it one. And where you had fog, where we were, you'd have bright sunshine up at the top. Where we had just cold weather down there at the very top, you might get some snow. You go the other way down to Route 101, which is, of course, is the major highway through Oregon and California. You get all the traffic that you want. The dog has all the work it can ever handle because of all the cars whizzing back and forth and every which way. And where we lived, you couldn't hear a sound at night. You couldn't hear nothing whatsoever. No planes, no traffic of any kind, no well-eared birds, of course, but no man-made sounds, I should say. Let's put it that way. You could hear the ocean very clearly from where we were, and it sounded like a great big air conditioner running all the time. It didn't have the ocean sound of hearing waves, but just heard this roaring sound in the background. It was very, very pleasant. You could also smell the ocean too, and it smelled wonderful. And in the morning, you walk outside, especially in the spring, and all those cedar trees smelled so good. And we had a lot of pine trees there, and just a wonderful, wonderful place. But you know, you can't live there forever. Didn't have to have any screens on the windows. There were no flies, no mosquitoes. It was just a wonderful place to live, and I called it Camelot. And in fact, in my emails, I said here in Camelot at the bottom, after all the people and animals put their names on. So it took me a while to get used to coming up here. It was a very depressing move, but I'm glad that Donna's feeling much better now. We have a wonderful home, which I won't bother describing to you, except that it's much bigger than what we had before. The home that we did have was built in 1974, but it was in wonderful condition for its age. This is a 1992 vintage home. You might be able to hear that roaring in the background. That's the heat pump running. And in this room, which is a 10 by 10 room, it's the first vent off the heat pump, and so that's why it's rather noisy. But it's a wonderful home. We've got 3/4 of an acre here as well, but it's all landscape. There's no grass to mow. It's just all rocks and trees and bushes that are very easy to take care of. But it was a great transition. So when I came here, I found out that there's a piano tuner who used to work for the Roseburg school system as a teacher, I think an English teacher. And he does piano tuning part-time, and he just retired last year to go to full-time into piano tuning. There are two other piano tuners here as well. So I did sell the business in Brookings. I couldn't believe it. That was an amazing story. I probably should have put that in before. But I got a call just as we were getting ready to move. We were packing things up. And this guy had just finished taking a piano tuning training course in Boston, Massachusetts, where he lived. But he wanted to come out here to work and semi-retire. He was about 59 years old, so he wanted to just get a part-time business out here. And since this was already picked up, he just bought the whole business from me, lock, stock, and barrel, which is a great deal. But anyway, I decided not to get into it in here because I just had enough of it. I mean, it wasn't going to go anywhere. It was just a declining business anyway, unless you got involved in refinishing and restringing and that type of thing, which I have done before but never really cared for. So we just put that to the side. But while we were still in Brookings, I got a hold of the Oregon Commission for the Blind. We didn't realize we were moving at the time when I first talked to them, and they got me going with a new computer, which I'm not using now because it's so noisy. It sounds like you're sitting in the middle of a wind tunnel. So I've got my little laptop out here, Windows 98, which works fine. and the scanner and the speech software and so on that I needed to make the business work better. And then about a year later, we moved, and I thought, boy, what a traitor I am. I got these people trying to get a business going for me, make it more effective. I went up to Portland to train to use Microsoft Access, and now I'm just, turning my tail, running away, like, I got this great equipment for nothing. I'm going to be going now, And I felt awful about that. I guess I come from the old school. I don't like to do that to people. We had never planned it that way, but it sure looked like it on the outside, like I just got all I could get, and I took off for the hills, So I apologized all over the place to this lady. Had set this all up for me. She said, "Well, that's not a problem. We didn't make you do this. I mean, we said we try to help you, and you worked out well. You were a good student, and you did what we told you to do. Went to to training in Portland and got good results there, and so on. So we're not upset about it at all." So in the meantime, she was telling me about a guy up here in Roseburg who wanted to use a computer, and he couldn't figure it out. He bought his own computer. He bought his own speech software program. He bought WindowEyes. And he'd been struggling for over 2 years, and he couldn't get anywhere at all. So she asked if I could help him, and I said, "Sure, I wouldn't mind doing that." So I called him on the phone a time or two while we were still in Brookings, and then we came over here to do some house hunting. We came over to look at the house, which is a long-winded story, but the sale of the old house in Brookings and the purchase of this house started out in April of 2004. But we couldn't move in until May because the man that lived here had had a plane crash. And he was in a wheelchair, and the reason he was selling was because he couldn't get his wheelchair through some of the doorways in the home, so he was having to prepare his land and a lot he owned next door to put up another mobile home and build a garage, so he couldn't get that done instantly. It would take a while, so we couldn't move here until late May. But we began to bring some things over to put in storage because we had no basement in the other home, and so we ran out of places to put things real quickly. And so when we came over to either house hunt or bring something to storage where I'd help him out a bit more, we'd work together. And one thing led to another, and when I finally got moved over here, Jan came over one day and said, "How would you like to work for us teaching people how to use computers?" And I thought she was kidding. I said, "Well, I don't mind. I have nothing else to do right now, and if you think I can handle it." So anyway, to make a long story short, I taught this one fellow from mid-June until September when he started out feeling well, and turned out that he had lymphoma. And it was a very aggressive type of lymphoma. They didn't expect that he would live. And partway through his treatment, he got to the point that one lung was completely collapsed and the other lung was almost collapsed. And he had no strength and no ambition, no nothing whatsoever. But he's totally healed right now. So I'm teaching him again to pick up where he left off. And I'm teaching another person who he's not retarded. He's a strange case. Everybody that has talked to him says he's retarded, and he's not retarded at all. He's not even a slow learner, but he has a hard time grasping abstract thought. And of course, computers are full of abstract thought. So, and it's not so much that, it's just his life doesn't work in abstract ways. For example, he has a pet dog, and one time the dog got out. And rather than put the dog back, he just went ahead and went to work on the bus because if he didn't get on the bus, he would be late for work. So that was more important than putting the dog up, even though the dog could have got hit by a car or could have been picked up with a APL or something, so you had to be careful what you do there. And that's a fascinating thing because he understands. It's not that he doesn't. He's taught himself quite a bit about computers, but he just can't seem to get the abstract thought process working, and that's where we're stuck. But I'm working with him now. Then I got another fellow that I started teaching a month ago. He's in a town about 100 miles from here, so what we do is go up in the morning one day. And I teach him in the afternoon, and then we stay in a motel overnight and come back, teach him the next morning and part of the afternoon, and then come back home that next afternoon. So it's a 2-day trip. And our daughter is driving me now because Donna doesn't like driving in the dark. But I think what we'll do is wait till the summertime comes when it gets dark later. We'll probably just make 2 different days a month, have one day at the beginning of the month and one day toward the end of the month and see how that works out. But it's a fascinating thing to do. I thought it'd be boring, but it isn't because, you're teaching the same thing over and over. You're teaching Outlook Express, you're teaching the file menu, you're teaching the tools menu, you're teaching how to open an email attachment and how to send an email attachment and how to copy and paste and so on. You get an email with 5 million headers and you take them out before you send it to somebody else. But every student is different and every learning curve is different and every concept in their mind is different. Some people think in pictures, like I said before. Some people have no clue whatsoever, and you have to kind of, give them analogy after analogy after analogy and make sure they go over and over and over it and make sure they understand it. So in all these cases, except for the second one I mentioned, my first student and this last one in the other town are over 60 years old, so their learning curve is a bit slower, which you can understand. And then the other guy is in his 40s. He doesn't have that problem. And then they both have a mutual friend I've been teaching on the side, because the Oregon Commission can't teach anybody unless they need their computer for a business of some sort. They can't just teach you to do it for a hobby or to get more get more functional, because they don't have the funds for that. So I'm teaching him on the side without charging him anything to speak of, because he just can't afford it. But we're lurking on him too. He's close to 80, but he also had prostate cancer surgery. No, he had liver cancer surgery just recently, and he wasn't expected to pull out of that, but he did that too. So we're back in business with him again too. So that's enough for me. That's 3 days a week, most weeks, and that's great. Paperwork takes some more time to send out the bill sometimes than it does to actually do the work, but the little laptop has sure come in handy, as has my type and speak, which works only if you don't bang it around too much, and so I try not to carry it very far, but I use it as a backup to keep track of things. And that's why I have all these computers sitting here. This one, the laptop is mine, the desktop is mine, and I've got one sitting here that I correspond with a guy in California who sent me his HP desktop machine, because it took almost 10 minutes to boot up and he couldn't figure why. And everybody told him to buy a new computer, so he bought a new computer instead of getting this one repaired. And of course it was full of viruses and full of all kinds of programs that didn't need to be in there, and I got it pretty well straightened out now. And then the fellow with the abstract problem is on a 3-year pass plan through Social Security, and he just got a new computer, so I've got his old Dell sitting here. It's a 450 megahertz machine that somebody put Windows XP on. You can imagine how slow that thing is. But it limps along and it creaks and groans and gets the job done until it crashes. And I'm trying to get that hopefully set up in case someone else might need it, but I'm not sure it's workable. I think I've used it enough that I know what to do and what not to do, so you don't do too many things at once. But somebody brand new probably wouldn't have any success with it at all, so we're not sure what to do about that one. It may have seen its last days, but anyway, I never thought I'd be doing this, and it's just a great, great way to spend your golden years, if you want to call it that, even though I hate Windows with a passion. And one of the other computers I've got here is an old 486 I got for nothing about a month ago, and I'm almost positive that when I get a speech board for it, I'm just going to work in DOS in my spare time when I'm writing letters and things, because I don't care about anything crashing or viruses attacking it or whatever. You know, I just want to get my work done and go on to something else. So we're going to get that up and running here quite soon. So that's where things are at the moment as I finish up this part 3 of the autobiography. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer those. If anybody has anything they think I left out or want to elaborate on more, I can always bring an addendum in. Anyway, y'all take care. Thanks for listening. Appreciate that. And again, the email address is snapp@computerconnect.net. And we'll be chatting again soon about something, I'm sure.